weekly of the Bundesliga season. This is David Svinopdorp talking outside, sitting with Jonathan Harding, Stefan Bienkowski, and Ross Dunbar. It was an exciting first match day, although we're confused while there's an international break right after the first match day.
It's terrible.
But,
I hate it.
But anyways, let's get into the first match day. The biggest shock of the weekend, I think we can all agree, is Schalke's loss to Eintracht Frankfurt. So let's just start, John. What the heck happened?
Well, they lost. that's what happened, and I think a lot of people were disappointed and surprised after the summer that they had. You know, it's so hard with Schalke and the fans that they have. Everybody has this huge sense of excitement about getting something together, and you know, this season seemed like something different was going to happen. Christian Heidel comes in, Marcus Weinzel comes in, they make some sensible signings, and it looked really encouraging, and here we are with a terrible first 20 minutes, and they never really recovered from it. They had a couple of opportunities in the second half, but again, why is Brilliant not starting? You know, he's the most expensive player in the club's history, and yet Klaas-Jan Huntelaar is still opted for in attack. Franco Di Santo playing out wide as a winger.
Yeah.
You know, some seriously odd question marks about the performance and the selection. Frankfurt aside, that I think most of us tipped for relegation again this season. Okay, maybe when you look at their form under Kovac at the end, it was just enough, or maybe 50-50 to suggest it was positive.
Mm-hmm.
But this is terrible. Why? And you have to say, why? There's no excuse. You know, we can give them all of the support in the world, and maybe there are a couple of injuries. You know, we talked about it earlier, you know, Koke being out a bit strange has obviously affected them. But there's no excuse. The quality in the Schalke team was there. Mm-hmm. It didn't execute. And it could have been more. You know, Ralf Fährmann saved a penalty in the second half from Alex Meyer, and it could have been 2-0 and terrible. It didn't look like a Weinzel team. It didn't perform like a Weinzel team. Yes, of course, you want a bit more time, but just really, really disappointing.
Yeah, I've kind of got two questions to ask here. Like, the first one is, did Weinzel underestimate Frankfurt? Because to me, the only logical answer I can come up to your question, why didn't he start the three players that have signed, the three players who obviously add so much to the team, is simply he might have thought, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll throw them on after half time when we're one or two goals up. And that's not what happened, because Frankfurt, unlike Werder Bremen on Friday, were really, really up for this game. And we've talked about in the past before, Kovac isn't, he's no Pep Guardiola, but I think at the very least he really gets players running for them. I was speaking to a Croatia fan actually today about this, and he was telling me that, you know, when he was with the national team, he no one really thought he was a great coach, a great tactician, but he really made players work for him. And I think that's exactly what's happening with this Frankfurt team. Frankfurt came out, and like you said, Schalke just didn't look interested at all. Within the first 20 minutes, I saw people on Twitter, Schalke fans, complaining, saying, we haven't even got started yet. And that's what it looked like. Now, the second question I'm really terrified about, which I might leave, actually, no, I'll hold on to it. I'll let Ross give his opinion on the game, and then I'll ask
Well, let's get into this first. I think the biggest question that we all have is, Breland Bola came in to replace Leroy Sané. He was the one that's supposed to be their next star, but why isn't he playing?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, I share the sentiments that, you know, this Schalke team should be beating Frankfurt. You know, when I saw the game, I was really surprised at how aggressive Frankfurt were. Like, you know, playing a lot of long balls. And I was thinking about Frankfurt, like, you know, at the start of the season, I kind of thought, you know, they have bought a lot of young players. Not a lot of proven players. They brought in guys like Varela on loan from Manchester United. It could have gone either way. They could have completely crumbled under the pressure of playing Bundesliga football, or they could perhaps work, because Kovac wants these guys to run all the time. And they just really outpowered Schalke, and a lot of these guys at the back for Schalke, Naldo especially, I think, these guys, they seem a little bit complacent. I mean, you look at Naldo's clearance in the lead up to the goal, that just reeked of complete complacency. You know what I mean? Like, he snatched at the clearance rather than just getting rid of it. You know, safety first. With Mbolo, I'm not sure he's a similar player to Sané. Not sure he's a kind of the same kind of one on one type of player. It's very surprising that they've spent so much money on a player that is not a key part of their team. I mean, if you make such a big investment in one player, you would expect him to be part of the side. Guys like Max Meyer didn't perform. Johannes Geis, I thought, was really poor in front of the defence. If you look at the instances when Frankfurt got really in behind the Schalke defence, Geis was just nowhere to be seen. He wasn't shielding the back four, wasn't covering the fullbacks when they went forward, and that was kind of to their detriment, because Frankfurt could have been 2-0 by half time because they had a goal, which was a one on one situation.
Oh yeah,
from Gavsimovic, he just carried the ball out of play, but. yeah. one-on-one against
great goal.
Caicedo. I mean, this is it's a bit of a mismatch.
Is Mbolo meant to be replacing Sane, or is he meant to replace Vintilar?
We'll see. I mean, it's up to you. I think it's
because the reason I ask is because is Weinsel too scared to drop Huntelaar? Because that's been the story of the last two coaches before.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, Huntelaar's definitely become a massive force at the club, and I don't think, you know, the way the Heidel's done business over the summer, I don't think the club has this nervous approach. I don't think Heidel would be someone, or Weinsel would even be someone to say we're not going to play him. Maybe Mbolo isn't fit. Maybe we don't know that there's something else there. It just seems really strange to me that, as you say, that he didn't play players in the opening game of the season, the chance to really send a message. Here are Schalke, 3-0 winners at Frankfurt, looked really good, bossed it. That didn't happen, you know? And that
seems really complacent, doesn't
really,
it?
Really, really complacent. Yeah. I mean, even with Bentaleb and Stambouli, the players that they've bought, you know, Babarama and Koke, all of these guys, it's definitely a step up on what we've seen Schalke sign in recent years, right, in terms of quality. But they still have to come together and they have to play as a team, and maybe that's where Weinsel is lacking. You talk about Kovac and the motivation or the human aspect. Maybe Weinsel doesn't have that, and maybe he's still working towards it, but Schalke can ill afford to take too long to find it.
Well, they've made a lot of changes this summer. You've mentioned a bunch of them. We've mentioned a lot of them. There's two more coming too, Stambouli from PSG and Bentaleb from Tottenham.
Well, Bentaleb was on the bench.
Yeah, so they're both in the team. I'm just saying there's a lot of changes at Schalke. Do we have to wait for these changes to come in, or should they still have put up a better showing in week one?
I think the interesting thing was, I was talking to people about this today on Twitter, and I think it was the account Schalke UK. I know you've listened to the podcast, so apologies if I got your account wrong, but he showed me the graphic of like the passing of Schalke, and it really showed that it was centre-half to full-back to Geis. Who's playing beside Geis? The other central midfielder, but it was going to the two central midfield. Oh, it was Aogo.
Yeah,
that's first, why then.
Yeah,
Dennis Aogo.
These two players in the central midfield kept getting the ball and then giving it back. It was like a triangle between the fullbacks, the central defenders, and the defence midfielders. There was never any passes between the fullbacks and Choupo-Moting or Thingy on the right wing, DeSanto. And Huntelaar didn't get any of the ball at all. There was absolutely, it didn't seem as though there was any structure whatsoever to how to play the game. Like, some teams you can see, like, right, everything they do is, like, as soon as they get the ball, right, centre-half, full-back, full-back, winger, winger takes the ball. Like, for example, Dortmund, whenever they got the ball, they sent it straight to Dembele. At no point, at least according to this graphic.
It's almost as if Brighton Reiter never left.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's definitely what I thought too. I mean, that was more going to be one of my questions.
And you know what though? This looked like, sorry to butt in there, but this looked like a Schalke team playing Bayern. Like, they couldn't get out their own half. That's the way that graphic looked. Not against a Frankfurt team that were probably, you know, camped on their own 20-yard line.
Yeah, I mean, if this team's going to progress at all this season, they just need to be able to deal better with the basics. I mean, Frankfurt weren't excellent, but in the first 20 minutes when they were under real pressure, it was long ball after long ball after long ball. And even Hoeveders, who obviously is German national team defender, didn't deal with those situations at all. So that's something that Weinsel has to deal with really, really quickly. Because if they play Bayern next week, and Bayern, we saw in the opening game,
They will play Bayern next week. That's why that's one of the big topics is that if they're going to perform like this against Frankfurt, what stick chance did they have?
I think the club will write off the Bayern game, but afterwards they have Hoffenheim, Cologne, and then it's one of the other lesser teams, I can't remember, but three teams they can win. I think those would be the games where, like, right, we need 7 or 8 points from those games.
But as much as they will have written off the Bayern game, in as most teams do, they still have to perform much better than Werder Bremen did, say, for example. At least show some sort of fight, some sort of pride, because at the moment, as you say, you know, just woeful.
The other thing I was going to bring up as well, my second question was the fact that...
Sounds ominous.
No, all summer we've been talking about Leverkusen and Dortmund and Bayern and whoever else. Everyone just assumed, right, Schalke have got Heidel, they've got Weinsel, they're good. They're good to go. We never ever considered any other option. What happens if these guys don't do it? What the hell can Schalke do? Because they have brought in the perfect people to fix the Schalke problem. And if they can't do it, who can?
Well, keep in mind that it's obviously the first year of this project. Christian Heidel needed many, many years to make Mainz the team that it is. Marcus Weinziel didn't really succeed in his first year. I think he avoided a relegation in his first year as well after taking over. So, I mean, you have to consider that this is the first year for these guys as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of changes that obviously came into the club. So, but, I mean, like Stefan said, this is a team that a lot of people assume is going to make the Champions League. After what you saw, Jonathan, in the first match day, is this a team that can do it? Or is it something that we're going to have to decide later?
I think we'll have to wait and see. One match day is always a bit too much. But I think the question is a valid one, you know. This is perfect pieces of the jigsaw to finish the picture, but
I mean,
they have to be given time.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
If they get Europa League, then okay, you know, that's okay. To be honest, it's okay because it's a starting spot and they can build from there. If they finish 10th, then we can start talking about real concerns.
That's exactly what I was going to say. If they finish 10th.
Yeah, then you have then
and
what?
But this isn't a normal team. This is Schalke.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But if they don't finish,
it's Schalke. They should be finishing third. I mean, this is Schalke. They'll go crazy and completely devour themselves.
Like yeah, absolutely, but if they do, then it will be Tunis's fault. Heidel is a very calm guy. I feel like he is the right man for the situation.
He fell asleep during the game.
Did
you see that? He fell asleep on the side.
He's probably so tired from all of the phone calls he's been making about players.
If
Weinziel, look, it's a huge test for him, and he knows that he needs to get it right quickly, and he has got a smaller window than he had at Augsburg. If they finish 10th, then he'll be gone. That's the nature of football. Heidel will stay, and that's the calming influence.
Yeah.
You can't finish 10th with this squad.
No, but I think it's going to definitely take time, though.
It might
have a really bad season this year, but it took Heidel 15 years to build.
It took Heidel 15 years, absolutely, but they didn't have the same manager.
Sure,
so.
And I think that'll be the test of Heidel's ability, is whether he pulls the plug too
early.
I think it's going to be 2 or 3 years, 4 years. I'm interested to see with the new signings they brought in, Bentaleb and Stambouli, because Stambouli is exactly the type of guy that they need in the midfield.
Puts pressure on guys as well, who's not playing well.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's going to take time. It takes a long time to mould teams, and I think there are players in that Schalke team, to be honest, who are energy suckers, guys maybe, who aren't pulling their weight.
Another person we haven't mentioned is Max Meyer, who must be absolutely exhausted right now. The season hasn't even started.
Just needs a break. Yeah. But the point
he brought in and played number 10 in that game.
Played in the Olympics, just got back. Is that, there was actually a lot of players from the Olympics this weekend that did not play.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so you can guess that he's probably exhausted.
Rushed, but also, I mean, yes, tired, definitely. But also interesting that he would drop off the face of the earth in terms of form. The guy was awesome at the Olympics. And, match day one in Frankfurt.
Against U23 teams. That's worth saying.
Yeah, but football is a lot of it has to do with confidence. Max Meyer's coming into the first game of the season thinking, I've had a great Olympics, and here he is. And then he plays like he's knackered. Okay, if he's knackered, then that's a bad decision by the management to play him. But for a player to play so poorly after playing so well, kind of a question mark for me.
We've seen this in the last few years with Schalke sometimes. I kind of thought Julian Draxler had the same kind of problem where he would have some good games and then he would have some really bad games, and it was kind of like a hot and cold type of player, and he would find himself in different positions all the time, either in the left or down the middle. And with Max Meyer, I think that performance in the final suggests to me this is a guy who could be a world-class player. If he plays like that, even half of the season, he'll go for more than Sané did in this summer.
Max Meyer.
He needs to be the centrepiece of this team, because if they want to play good football, he's the guy.
They should build a team around him the same way that Dortmund built their team around Götze when he was first at Dortmund.
But that point, as well meaning as it is, that's one of the problems with Schalke. What they did with Sané and what they've done with Draxler is they're so easy to just unload so much pressure on these young guys, because they're a club that are so good at bringing through these players whenever they've come through. They're like, oh, thank God Draxler, he's here to save us. Oh, thank God Sani's here to save us.
Yeah, but building a team around him is different from the way in which, let's just rely on one person to save us in games. Like, if you build a team, then, I mean, I use the Götze example at Dortmund when he first arrived, because that worked so well. Yes, of course, he had Lewandowski with him and that helped, but build the right components.
That's much easier when you have someone like Jurgen Klopp in the sideline, who's always got his arm around you, and he's taking the pressure.
That's the challenge we put to Vital.
It's a question of trust, isn't it? I mean, Sané, even when Sané was playing last year, we had this kind of argument back and forth as to whether Sané was at the level that people were saying. And the problem with Sané last year was that even when he was playing badly, he was getting taken out of the team. And I think with Meyer, it's so important, even if he doesn't play well, you've got to keep him in the team, you've got to give him some trust, and even, you know, I know this is ridiculous, but you probably make him the captain. Give him all that responsibility. Make him the centrepiece of the team, because in that Olympics game, I think he proved at the highest level in the Maracanã against Brazil that he can take responsibility.
There's nothing highest level about Olympic football.
Well, playing against the Brazilian team that was,
well,
was,
Neymar,
was up for it. I don't think, probably, you're probably lucky if Max Meyer plays in a game of that kind of atmosphere and prestige.
Europa League is only weeks away.
Yeah.
I think the point about Naldo, though, is a good one, just to come back to that, because I said when they signed him, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, great experience. I'm like, yeah, but he's got the turning circle of an elephant, right? And to be honest, yes, experience, you know, has a lot to play and has a lot of advantages in a defence, but Schalke already have that. They already have Hervidis. You know, the guy's an absolute club legend. He's got loads of experience. He's a World Cup winner. Why do you need to sign someone who's 33, who obviously Wolfsburg were like, okay, you know what? He's obviously getting to the point where we're okay to ship him out. It's a short-term solution. Yes, he's got experience and he might well be a good figure for the locker room, but Schalke don't necessarily need that more than they need performances on the pitch at the moment.
All right, well, let's switch gears now to the other team of that Ruhr Derby, which is the Borussia Dortmund. They played Mainz over the weekend. They won 2-1. But, John, they didn't look at their tip-top shape, to say the least, under Tuchel.
No, and I think it's always hard for Dortmund because everybody watches Bayern and then watches Dortmund and then matches them and says, or compares them and says, right, you know, your turn. I think the main thing for Dortmund and for the Bundesliga and for everybody who's watching is breathing a sigh of relief, or can breathe a sigh of relief now, because they won. And that was the most important thing. The scoreline suggested it was perhaps a little closer than it needed to be. Dortmund were pretty comfortable, but they struggled to break down Mainz for a lot of the game. I think that would be the concern. Ross, you were at the game. I mean, you saw things better than I did.
I can just clear what you said there. I mean, I think it needs to be put in context that although we're kind of really desperate for a title race, I'm not sure this Dortmund team is ready. And I think Tuchel is even publicly saying these things, that the team needs to improve, the team needs time to function. They're going to have an international break where a lot of their players are probably going to be on an international duty.
18, I think.
So they're not going to have any time there to try and mould something together. I mean, there's so much potential in this side, but even in that Mainz game, they gave up a lot of really good chances. I was actually looking at the expected goals map as well, and Mainz, expected goal, I don't know if we're doing a Craig Bully impression for that, but the expected goals metric was suggesting that Mainz were basically on par with them. They had
Christian Clemens.
Yeah, great chance. Oh, that makes it 1-1. When Muto came off the bench, that gave them a bit of a
Muto was a big difference maker, but we're outside, you hear the siren there. But Stefan, I want to ask you about Schürrle, because he's one of those players that is showing a little bit of that potential now. And I thought he had a really good game. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I thought Dortmund were very boring, which isn't really a fair criticism of any football team. But I think I agree, kind of echo what the guy said. Got the job done, end the job. But yeah, I genuinely thought Schürrle was actually quite good. And I thought, this is exactly what Andre Schürrle is going to give you. I kind of mentioned this, and I did a sort of preview of the club earlier in a few weeks, and he is. He's a solid Bundesliga-proven talent. He's a safe pair of hands in the Bundesliga. It's as simple as that. He gets you goals, he gets you assists, and that's exactly what we saw for Dortmund. Now, here's the thing. We're still talking about Dortmund. We have to also appreciate this is Mainz. This isn't Schalke stumbling over Frankfurt. This is a Mainz side that caused huge problems for both Dortmund and Bayern last season.
Lösel said after the game that they were set up perfectly. They were doing exactly what they wanted to do, and it was interesting to see that Serdar was playing as well as he was. You saw Onisivo, who came on, who he did a decent job as well, although he could have probably contributed more into the attack. But it's, even though this Mainz team is really hard to break down, these are types of teams that Dortmund are probably going to face a lot.
Yeah, but I'm willing to give Dortmund the credit here, because I think Martin Schmidt walked away from that game and thought, he's probably quite happy with that, because he's aloof, so he'll be like, oh well, it points don't matter, at least my team played well.
We don't want to blow our own trumpet, but last week we said that Mainz would be contenders for European football.
Yeah.
And I think we saw those indications, because they're a well organised team. Schmidt gets the best out of them. I mean, we talked about Schmidt in detail last week about how much he really takes interest in the character of the players. The man management is so good there, and you saw that in the
David's
way
made
the players
a great
were
point about the way they're playing in Colorado and the high altitude.
Yeah,
that team looked really good to go.
You saw that. They weren't even at the end of the game. We noticed if this was a day where it was like 32, 33 degrees heat, probably 40 on pitch level. and they were going all the way to the end. I mean, they had chances like Clemens, like you mentioned, and Muto came off the bench, and Austin Alley, the new signing. They looked like a good side. And I guess I completely agree with the guys. I think you kind of have to give Dortmund some credit. Even though they were boring, maybe, and maybe not at kind of the right rhythm, they still got 3 points.
Dave, how hard does Colorado get in July?
Colorado is probably... In Celsius, it's...
About
35, 36,
maybe?
I was at a wedding there in September last year.
Without a life story.
And it was, yeah, it was actually down to... It got down to 10 degrees, but it depends on where you are.
In July?
In July. Or no, it was in September, like I said.
I thought it was really hot. I'm totally blown off. Yeah.
Well, because remember, Colorado, I have to say, is a high... It's a high altitude. It's in the mountains.
I see.
So the point I just made last week is that... Mines obviously wants an athletic team, and that's one of the ways they did it. But let's get back to the Dortmund
The point I was going to make was that Martin Schmidt probably looked at the conditions on Saturday and thought, all right, my team are ready for this. And I think we really have to give Mainz the credit here. I think we have to give Dortmund credit. Everyone's saying, it was only 2-1, they didn't win 6-0 like Bayern. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a Mainz side that are really going to go on and, you know, pick up some really big scalps this season. And come December, we'll be saying, it's really good that Dortmund picked up 2. All 3 points in the first game there.
John Julian Weigl came on in the second half, and he completely changed the dynamic of that midfield. I mean, they started with Gonzalo Castro and Sebastian Rota, but when you had Weigl on, it was a different. They played in a very different and more exciting way, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Weigl, it's funny, we were talking to him on Wednesday in an interview with... TW was talking to him about it. He said he wanted to play more passes that would take more players out of the game. And I think you saw that straight away when he came on. And, you know, Dortmund really struggled against the Mainz side that we just said, you know, deserved the credit because they were very compact, they were very well disciplined. And Weigl comes on and he starts to make the passes that perhaps people have been wanting him to make for a while, you know, fewer, safer passes, more dangerous passes, more risky. And it worked out well. Dortmund needed him in that sense. But this is exactly what Dortmund need. They need players to be able to come on and do that and not be second-rate players. You know, Weigl coming on for Castro or midfield and changing things up and having Roder in there, you know, that's the kind of depth that we've always wanted to see in Dortmund. You know, those three players are excellent to have in midfield. You know, it's absolutely wonderful.
Well, you mentioned depth, and I thought it was interesting. When Weigl came on, I thought it was very interesting that they have a lot of players that can go box to box in the midfield, right? But they don't have a guy that can replace Julian Weigl should he need a breather after the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sebastian Roder isn't too bad. I mean, he's obviously not the same type of player, but
well, that's what I mean. He's not the same type of player.
No other city. Well, Nuri Sahin to an extent.
Nuri Sahin is.
But he's the type of defensive midfielder that Julian Weigl is. I don't think so.
No, true, but it's very hard to find players like Julian Weigl. You know, they're not very sexy, so nobody watches them really, unless they're really into football. Yeah. But
he's really good at getting the job done.
He circulates the ball so well. You know, when he first takes his first touch, he already knows where it's going to go, and he knows the three players that are around him, and he's already aware of the movement of the game. It's hard to find players like that.
Well, the reason why I bring this up is because, like I said, I thought he made a huge difference when he came on. If Weigl, for some reason, is out, is Dortmund in trouble? Is the Dortmund kind of dependent now on having Weigl?
I don't think they're too reliant on him.
No. I mean, it's just this is the kind of the talking point du jour in German football, like, you know, this packing metric that came out in the summer. It's not really kind of made any headway in the international media, but it's about how many players can you take out with one pass.
Yeah.
And Julian Weigl is so good at that. Mm. And what I thought was really interesting about Dortmund in the first half was that they weren't able to do that at all. Credit to Mainz, of course, for the way they were set up.
Definitely.
But Roda, Castro and Kagawa...
Kagawa particularly.
Yeah, these guys were not particularly... effective in that way. And certainly when Weigl came off the bench, and Guerrero as well, who I thought was really good in that kind of cameo role that he had in midfield, these are guys who can penetrate the lines really well. And
Guerrero playing in midfield, I thought that was very interesting.
Well, I think it was expected, though. I mean, Schmelzer is your first-choice left-back. He's your captain.
You've got to play him.
So he's going to play.
Yeah.
So Guerrero has to find another role in the team. And in the European Championships, I thought he was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's the kind of guy who is really attack-minded. It's a kind of like, I mean, I'm actually reading a book about Bielsa, and Bielsa is one of those guys that Tuchel has been influenced by. And one thing about Bielsa was that he would always play attacking players in defensive lines because they can penetrate the lines much, much better. Mats Hummels was great at that. I think Bartra has got the potential to be really good at that.
Well, I was going
to
say, I thought Bartra deserves some credit as well. I thought he did really well.
Defensively, pretty solid.
Interesting you say about Weigl. Weigl said that he Toni Kroos has been a huge influence on him. Yeah. His time with the Germany team in the summer in France, you know, he said at training sessions he was watching Toni Kroos and his ability to circulate the ball, what you're saying about packing and that sort of like taking players out. Mm-hmm. Best pass master for him to learn from, to be honest.
That's interesting. When you say, Davis, you think there's no one who can replace Weigl. I actually think Rota's the standout like individual talent in that
I think there are enough.
Because I think, yeah, you can put Castro or Sahin where Weigl plays, but I don't think there's anyone who can really replace Rota, except maybe Bender. And I don't think Bender's to the same quality.
He's not quick
as Rota.
Enough either.
Rota really reminds, I've seen this to you on Saturday during the game, Rota really reminds me of Khedira, actually, and the way he's that box-to-box player who people just assume they're defensive, but it's the way they just, I can't really describe it except for he basically just gets in the box, gets in the
he's
mixer.
Like an ankle biter.
No, well, yeah, he just,
the ball
he just and he caused so much pressure. Like Khedira's so good at this for German national team, and no one really takes notice of it. That he's actually, even though he's not technically good, he doesn't make the passes. He sometimes scores the goals, but just the fact that he gets there and makes space opens up attack because the opposing team doesn't really expect him because they think, oh, Khedira's the defence midfielder.
Yeah,
and that's what Rota has been is now doing for Dortmund, and I've been watching him and thinking, there's no one. He really offers something new for that Dortmund midfield because
He was unshackled when Weigl came on, I think, and he was able to get forward a little bit more. So that's one reason why I think Weigl is an important, probably the most important player.
Because he played really well against Bayern, I thought, in the Super Cup as well. So.
Yeah, and Rota definitely looks like a player that's going to make
just
big difference.
Even though the fortunes have been spent on the attacking players, one didn't even go on the bench, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I just want to say Rota might be one of the standout performers.
Or Barca for eight.
That's a good segue.
Or Barca for eight as well,
Let's take a good segue because let's turn into that attack, back into that attack, and let's talk about Dembele. He looked really raw, and of course, Balogun said after the game that he's a very impressive player, but John, I think you're disagree with that.
Look, I mean, for me, I know everybody's loving this guy, and I get it. I get it to an extent, because he's got flashy feet, and he's rapid, and he scares defenders. I get that. But I feel like he's a 21st century footballer. He's an Instagram footballer. He's a Vine footballer. That's exactly what he is. Mm-hmm. And that's so infuriating, because actually, when you look at the big picture is, Dembele had the most take-ons successful of all wingers in all the top five European leagues on the weekend. But he had 65% pass completion rate.
Yeah.
That's woeful.
That's bad.
And if you watch the number of times that he cuts in and he beats someone and he's like, and then he does nothing with the ball. Or he gives the ball away. It just infuriates me.
Yeah.
Do you know how annoying it is? If you're in the box or you're in defence and you just want the ball back and you give it to a winger and he does something fancy and he loses it.
Yeah.
It's infuriating.
I was watching this with you and
decision making.
I'm about to make a comparison, which will lead to Ross throwing his table in there. It really reminds me of Leroy Sané in the sense I used to watch
Ross's face now.
Used to watch Schalke every single week, and every single week Schalke fans just always say the exact same thing. His decision making in the final third is atrocious. Sané can run by five players. Sometimes he runs by five players and scores goals, and that's the vines that get retweeted 400,000 times. A 6-second striker. Right,
that's exactly
these guys, and it's fine because Sané will ultimately, he'll learn how to fix that aspect of his game and go on to become a world star. I'm sure Dembele will as well. But I totally agree with you. Right now, I was saying to you yesterday, I think I might be saying it to Ross as well. I kind of get this impression that modern football, because its speed is it's gone so much faster now that there's this huge demand for fast players.
Yeah.
They have to be fast, and it's now got to the point where they have to be fast. Regardless of how good they are in making passes or with the intelligence on the ball.
Yeah, fast with the ball.
And I feel like, and Aubameyang, you made the comparison. Yeah. He's like a young Aubameyang.
Yeah, in the first year at Dortmund, Aubameyang was very wild. Dortmund didn't really know what to do with him. They were playing him out wide. Is he a striker? And he had a lot of that, And you saw it, the best example of all of this is Cristiano Ronaldo. In his first couple of years at United, he was all flicks. He was all tricks. He was muscled off the ball and he didn't really have much about him. He was cool. He was cool to watch if you were watching a Vine or you're watching a GIF or you're watching a little bit of a game. You know, that guy's got skills, But it was the year or two after that he became phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And Aubameyang has now become the striker that Dortmund needed. In the last couple of years, he's been consistently good. He scores loads of goals. Everybody's happy and they found his place. Dembele, I imagine, based on his talent, will probably be that guy in a season. But right now, it's just so infuriating.
Well, there's one guy I do want to kind of compare him to. I'm going to pass this over to Ross, and I'm wondering what you think of the comparison between Dembele
as Ross strokes his chin in contemplation.
Dembele and Kingsley Coman. Those are two players that are in the running, probably for the same position in the French national team. And Kingsley Coman is also a very vertical player. So, who do you think right now is going to be basically the guy that for France or for their team, or do you think that they're both going to be eventually be really good players?
I think they're both going to be very good players. I think there's a bit of a difference with Coman and Dembele based on the kind of first few months that we've seen of them in the Bundesliga. I think Coman's final ball is actually really, really good.
Yep.
I mean, it's very rare that you see a winger who can actually pinpoint across. And the one game that really stands out for me was Juventus, where he just completely turned that game.
Yeah.
Two or three pinpoint crosses to
just
Lewandowski. And I have not seen any evidence so far that Dembele can do that. I actually just had it in my mind there that I actually think technically, in terms of passing and movement, I think Pulisic might already be at an advanced level than he is. The comparison that came to mind with Dembele was actually Shaqiri, where he's got pace, he's got power, he's got ideas, he's got skill, but does he tactically, can he fit within a team?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I wonder if he's the most reliable player. You saw with Shaqiri that Guardiola never really had that kind of bond with him. Tried him a few times, didn't really work, and now he's out the door. Interesting to see if Dembele can actually stick it out with Tuchel, because we know how demanding that he can be when it comes to trying to form that kind of collective structure.
The problem with these players who have the pace and might lack in other aspects of it is that when you get to the highest level, best players know exactly how to deal with them. The best defenders know exactly how to deal with them.
Yep.
And that's going to become really apparent in the Champions League when Dortmund play good
Real
teams.
Madrid.
Yeah, and Dembele goes missing and everyone's saying, why is he gone missing? He just skinned six Frankfurt defenders last week, and where is he? And that will be when that'll be the real test, and that'll tell you whether he has the intelligence and the passing ability and the ability in the final thirds to make the big difference. But you won't like this, but I actually think you could learn a thing or two off André Schürrle, because despite what you might say about Schürrle, his decision making in the final third, I think, is fantastic. He set up the goal in the game, his cross was outstanding, and you know, in his early days,
yeah,
he's got a great shot on him. He's got a great shot on him. And when he first came through, he was just player of pace. But he's gotten so much smarter, I think. And he doesn't.
I feel like that's Tuchel more than André Schürrle necessarily himself.
Tuchel, age, probably playing abroad with Mourinho, all these kind of guys. Because I actually thought Chelsea was a one-trick pony, cut inside and left foot shoot.
It was like
Iron
Robin, but four.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, yeah, okay. Look, I've had a long-standing issue with André Schürrle. I think he's
that's why I like to bring him up when you're
overrated.
On the show.
Yeah, I know. I think he's overrated. Yes, I totally agree that he played very well. I think his experiences abroad and the moves that he's made have certainly made him a better player. I think Thomas Tuchel is the perfect manager for him right now, based on his development at Mainz when they first worked together. This stage of his career, it's the right decision. I feel like Dembele is a completely different striker. He could certainly learn something from how Schürrle works with Tuchel and the effect they've had on each other, that perhaps. But decision-making-wise, sure, Dembele can learn from almost every other member of the Borussia Dortmund team. But I don't know whether the comparison is.
All right, let's switch into the game of the week. And which game of the week in terms of the time that it was played, which is Gladbach against Leverkusen. Now, Gladbach won that game on a late goal 2-1, and it was a big win for them because they had also just qualified for the Champions League, and now they're basically undefeated in their first four games of the season. But John, I have a question for you. They have this system, this back three system and these three attackers, is it too one-dimensional, or do you think is it one that they can succeed with over a 34-game season?
I mean, we talked about it the other day. André Schubert is actually a very underrated tactician. I think the way he's approached games last season in Europe certainly knew or proved that he knew what he was doing. I think Gladbach might have been assisted by the fact that they were in their groove coming into this game. I felt like that they were really up for it based on their performances. Okay, you know, maybe a weaker opposition, but they still, you know, battered Young Boys, got into the Champions League, looking really decent. Whereas Leverkusen were all talk and no walk coming into the game. And
mm-hmm.
I think that showed. There was only a 10-15 minute spell where I really thought Leverkusen looked good.
Mm-hmm.
The substitutions they made didn't really suggest to me that there was as much depth there as they need.
Puyan Paulo as the
guy exactly.
That got the
he's still there, you know. There's question marks about that. You know, have they not done more, you know, Çalhanoğlu playing up front, not really pumped about that.
To be fair, that Chicharito was missing and Julian Brandt obviously wasn't fit enough.
No, I know, but, you know, even without those players, I felt like they could have given a better account of themselves than they did. I mean, your point about, you know, you wrote a piece, Steph, about everybody was talking about Leverkusen and they were talking themselves up before the season, and here they are losing the opener against a side that really is challenging them, you know, it doesn't bode well.
I thought it was actually, the key thing for me was actually maybe a little bit of an experience on Leverkusen's part, because in the lead up to the first goal, it was a quick free kick. Now, if you look at the highlights, Poniallo has his back turned. Now, the first thing that a manager would say is, stand in front of the ball. Because if you stand in front of the ball, he hasn't taken that quick free kick. Gladbach don't score. Second one, long ball, Gladbach on the counter-attack. The three defenders of the four step up. Tin Yedvai tracks the runner, goes all the way back, and Lars Stindl goes through and scores the winner. Now, if Tin Yedvai was maybe a little bit more experienced, had a little bit more nous at that level, maybe he had just gone, right, I'm going to step up as well, play him offside. Take the risk, have confidence in the thing that you've been training on. Don't track the runner, step up and play the offside.
The other thing about that first goal is that ball from Kramer gets flicked on by Jonathan Tarr, which takes Toprak out of the game.
Yeah.
And if there's better communication there, then he doesn't make the header and he leaves it.
Toprak was a massive concern for me. I know that Toprak last year was really good and actually one of Leverkusen's best players, but I think it's similar to Naldo. He's so complacent at times. His decision making is all over the place. He's rash in the tackle. And I think when Dragovic goes in there, I think that could make a big difference to that defence.
Agreed.
Well, Stefan, I want to ask you something, because I brought this up in the preview episode last week. Is Roger Schmidt the team that is going to take Leverkusen to the next level, or do they need to find somebody else?
Yeah, because you mentioned this in the preview and you don't think so.
We're talking about all this nitty-gritty stuff, about these basic defensive mistakes. And then you have Roger Schmidt, who's been there for now multiple years, and he doesn't really have the biggest track record of being a big manager. Now, of course, Leverkusen may not be able to attract a guy that has a big track record, but by the same token, is Schmidt the guy to take him to the next level?
Yeah, well, the thing that really struck out for me in this game was that it really seemed to highlight the two managers. And by that, I mean that, this is a Leverkusen side that, sure, we have to put an asterisk next to this result because they're playing a Gladbach team who were in full flight, they already played 3 or 4 games this season, and that really showed, I think. And Leverkusen were missing their best player and perhaps their second best player in Chicharito and Brandt. But it was the high line. And it's a high line that Schmidt's played since he joined Leverkusen. And it's a high line which has cost him games against Dortmund, Gladbach and Bayern Munich for the last 2 seasons. I was speaking to a Leverkusen fan today and he was saying to me, nothing's changed. And this is a real concern about Roger Schmidt. The fact that this summer the club have done exceptionally well to hold on to the players that they have to hold on to. And they spent a fortune bringing in Kevin Volland. He hasn't had a best season last season, but I mean, Ross and I went to watch their friendly against Porto. I thought it looked really good. And I thought, you know what, this is a guy who could really do something for them. So the tools are there for Schmidt to at least make an effort going from Dortmund, but he's playing the same system. Who plays a high line against Gladbach? It's impossible to conceive. And that then leads to the point I was going to make about Gladbach, where you have a coach in Schmidt who seems insistent on playing his style, even in the face of obvious oblivion, and then you've got on the other side a guy in Schubert who has come out from nowhere and proved himself as a really good tactician. I was blown away by the way Gladbach counterattacked against Leverkusen. I was saying this to John and I were watching this game, and I really genuinely thought it was a thing of beauty to be. Now, the game finished 2-1, and I thought that was a huge compliment to Leverkusen. They got the goal, and you're right, the second half they looked like the better team when Gladbach sat back, but then they bring on Hazard, and all of a sudden, boom. They've done it again. It's almost as if Gladbach got their goal. They thought, right, okay, we're fine. Leverkusen score, like, right, we have to score another one. And almost immediately, through the exact same style of play which they've been doing throughout the game, they did it again. They could have scored 5 or 6 like that.
Throughout the last 3 or 4 games, they've scored almost all of their goals. Yeah. Have been superb.
They scored a stupid amount of goals this preseason. Yeah. Now, I know you can't really count anything that happens in preseason friendlies, but they've got no trouble scoring goals. And the really weird thing about the squad is they've got, like, 6 wingers. So like Fabian Johnson and Andre Hahn, they're just throwing these guys. It's like an NFL team. They're just throwing receivers on or something, and then they're just going for it, like Hail Marys all day.
Well, that's the I think that one thing that I can see can be a falter for Gladbach is that they have a lot of players that are basically kind of the same type, the same build. They're quick and they're good and they're attacking and they can get forward. But I mean, you have to. You saw the reinvention of Ibrahim Traoré, and you saw the reinvention of Fabian Johnson. Is Schubert going to have to do that in order to get all these players on the field, or is he going to be able to, or is he going to need, basically, is it too, that's what I meant when I said one-dimensional. Does he have too many players that are the same?
No, I think, as Steph says, I think he has the right group that work well in his system that he can adapt depending on the opposition. And, you know, he was the smarter coach on the weekend, and I think that was obvious to see. It's interesting what you say about Schmidt. And is he the right man? And we've asked this question probably about three or four times now since he's been at Leverkusen, because there have been three or four spells in which he's completely lost the plot. They've defended very high, and then they've gone on a poor run of form. But he always comes back and saves it.
Yeah.
And you have to ask, how much longer do you want to have this stop-start heart attack situation? Because if you look at the end of last season, they won, what, like seven of the last eight or something stupid?
I think the way they save it is that they keep coming against good teams, getting spanked, and then they win six games that they're supposed to win. And that's Leverkusen to the team, in my opinion. They win the games they're supposed to win, but when they come up, and they won like one of 12 games they played against the other top three teams last season, which is atrocious. And I think much to do is because Schmidt has its one system which works well against teams that they're expected to win, to beat, but against better teams than them, it always falls apart.
It's a good test for them this season, though, because I think the group that they've got in the Champions League, they should be in the knockout rounds. I think they should be aiming for second. I think that they can get through that. And I think, if you know, you have to remember, or we have to remember, that I think Leverkusen are where they should be. They are where they should be.
Yeah.
You know, we can't expect them to be winning the title. We can't expect them to be doing necessarily much more. Obviously, in the games against bigger teams, they could certainly be performing smarter. You know, they could be more intelligent. But I don't know whether they can really go higher in terms of where they are at the moment. Yeah. You know?
It's difficult to analyse where Leverkusen are going to be at the end of the season after just one game. But you made the point about Chicharito to win
second, according to your
that's why I was
table,
that's why
so.
I was staying very quiet.
Someone predicted them first. Who predicted them first?
I don't know. So also said somebody predicted them sixth. So it's all over the place.
Who did Didi Hamann predict?
Didi Hamann predicted them. No, he predicted Schalke second.
Yeah.
Dortmund sixth.
You mentioned Chicharito and Brandt, though, and this is quite a key point, though, is they didn't even take their chances when they had them. I mean,
yeah,
I know we're tournament glad, but I had a lot of chances, but so did Leverkusen. They hit the bar, hit the post. You know, if they really should have taken those chances. And if you have Chicharito in the box rather than Poniello, it's a big difference in quality.
Huge.
So I'm prepared just to give this swipe off the kind of calendar and
But they weren't playing him. They were playing Kevin Volland. He came on.
Yeah.
It was Volland and
Çalhanoğlu's a player who I'm really sceptical about this season.
I'm really sad about it because he played so well, you know, and then he just dropped off. And ever since he said he was going to equal the free kick record, he's basically disappeared off the face of the earth. Yeah, no, he hasn't. And he's been completely out of form.
I don't know where he fits in this team.
But don't play him as a striker, you know.
But then I don't think they had any other options, because you look at that bench, it's like maybe you know who else. But to go back to another player you mentioned, Dragovic, I think he might be quite key, because when you look at that Dortmund, that Leverkusen team in pre-season, you think they don't need a central defender. They've got Papadopoulos, they've got Toprak, they've got three solid Bundesliga players, one of which Dortmund were apparently desperate to sign.
That's probably the best compliment that Kyriakos Papadopoulos has ever gotten.
Yeah,
he's pretty,
they've got at least two first team. So the thing I'm wondering is if, and they spent a fortune getting Dragovic as well, who's apparently on extremely huge wages. They spent a huge amount of money trying to sign him, and it seems as though Schmidt's like, this is the guy I need. This is the guy who will allow me to play that high line. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes in and he allows him to play that high line, because the likes of Toprak and stuff just don't like that they can cut it.
The dilemma is that Toprak is the captain, and he doesn't play like a captain, because like we said earlier, I think he's rash, quite clumsy at times. I do not understand why Dortmund would have wanted a player like that in their defence. Recipe for disaster.
Well, compared to Bartra.
Yeah, I know. Bartra's actually quite kind of calm and composed, whereas Toprak's just kind of all. But we actually saw that in the game against Porto as well.
Yeah.
Porto were, you know, these kind of quick triangles, and Toprak was all over the place. I mean, that to me is a massive concern going forward.
No, for Bernd Leno, though. I thought he had a good game. Made a couple of amazing saves with
his
face.
His face had a good game.
And for a man that didn't play well last season.
So did Sammer, actually. Sommer. He made some really good saves as well, actually. Unfortunately, leading up to the second goal as well.
I just wanted to touch on the point you made about Ibrahim Traoré, though. Like, he's obviously a very good player anyway, because he plays central midfield for the national team, Guinea, and he is a player who can actually move the ball really well. And you saw that in the counter-attack. That pass For the first goal, I think it was. No, actually, there was one chance they had just before it, to tell a lie. And Traoré on the counter-attack was so precise, so accurate. And you see a lot of teams in Germany who make this transition from defence to attack really quickly with a lot of power and a lot of pace. Don't have the composure or the right passing in Traore, I thought was excellent.
But that's the best thing about Gladbach having these similar players.
Mm.
Because Hazard, Traore, Stindl, Hahn, Herrmann, they're all Raphael, they're all capable.
Thomas Hoffman.
They're all capable of playing that pass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that pass from Hazard in the 88th minute to Stindl is gorgeous.
Yeah,
and that's like, that's
a
his
lot
first
of gorgeous
touch.
Passes all in
yeah,
the
exactly.
I'm pretty sure that's his first touch.
He comes on and he just knows, you know, and that's the advantage of having players who are similar because they can. They know the system. They know where they're starting.
I think Schieber deserves so much credit for that.
Huge,
because that team looked like they've been doing those drills all summer.
Yeah.
I wonder if actually he's up to Thomas Hazard that we should maybe have a few words on him because so far this season in the Champions League he's been excellent.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder if this is his breakout season maybe. I don't think he gets compared to his brother a lot, and he's certainly far off that.
Well, keep in mind at the end of
his brother
season,
hasn't been good for a while,
yeah,
so why not?
Yeah, at the end of last season, Thorgan Hazard definitely was in a. He definitely stepped it up a notch that we hadn't seen before. So let's get into this final segment that we are just going to start now. These are things that we basically want to get off our chest, whether positive or negative. So I think John wants to start. And John, what do you want to get off your chest?
Well,
this
just some defending notes, really. Obviously, you know,
what a surprise.
With Harding Claxton.
Yeah, well, the Claxton goes. Hoffenheim, Nagelsmann had Hoffenheim working all summer on fitness, and he wants to do fitness tests during the season to make sure that his side don't get weary minds and weary legs in games, so that they don't concede late goals. And in their first game of the season, they conceded a late goal. And I think, yes, Leipzig, well played, the goal was well taken, but from a Hoffenheim perspective, it's very, very frustrating. And I think defensively, Niklas Süle, really like him, good player. Get him in that situation. You want players to stop the cross. You want the cross to be prevented. You don't want to be in a situation where you're even giving the opposition a chance. And I think I was just frustrated that for a team that actually promises quite a great deal defensively, that they didn't deliver. The same could be said for Hamburg. Very frustrated that they decided to defend idiotically and allow Ingolstadt the chance to walk the ball in, basically. Teams that you are kind of hoping that will be better. You know, the Bundesliga obviously gets a lot of stick for not being very good defensively as a league. And it didn't do very well this weekend in proving anything but that. You know, it was not great. I mean, the worst example of all and my biggest boo of the weekend is almost certainly Werder Bremen. I thought that it was despicable. Verging on a level in which you could say these are people who are refusing to do their jobs properly.
Mm. Even though they were playing Bayern Munich.
I do not accept that playing Bayern Munich in the Allianz is a reason enough to stop doing your job to an acceptable level. It's all well and good losing 6-0. If you lose 6-0 and, you know, there was clear evidence that you were pushing and you were trying, and I just felt that the system was terrible, the space that they left open was huge. Just unacceptable. Defensively this weekend, Hoffenheim should have done better. They should have won the game. Hamburg should never have been that poor. They were at home. And Werder Bremen should have lost 2-0 instead of 6-0 and had some pride.
Just quickly on Werder Bremen, our colleague Sarah at Deutsche Welle, she wrote a really good article today actually about the way that, considering the way that Werder Bremen finished the season last season, you think they'd come into this new one with huge amount of confidence, you know? Signing Max Kruse, who, okay, sure, he's not everyone's favourite player, but I think he's a really,
yep,
well,
really
he's
impressive. Yeah, no, I know, but the point I'm making is, like, you think they would have some sort of momentum, and then you're right, that team just came out on Friday and they were just like, oh, we're going down again, aren't we? We're going to find our. So they didn't make any effort, but my rant.
Yes, Stefan, what is your rant?
I don't have a rant, I have a praise, actually. I'm going to praise Klaus Allofs. I was making this point on Twitter, actually, and I think all season, we've been predicting doom and gloom for Wolfsburg, and we've actually been predicting it for probably all season, actually, since about January time, when their league form began to dip, and they were doing well in the Champions League, and then players are, as predicted, beginning to be linked with leaving the club, Rodriguez, Draxler, blah, 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 blah. And I thought they've had such a solid summer. I mean, the team that they put out that won away against Augsburg was incredible. I was really surprised that they won. John, I was saying this in our thing on Saturday, they won 3 away games last season and they put out almost an entirely new 11 and they win, and I thought they were great. I think it's fantastic that they can get rid of players like Dante and Naldo. I think Shaw's a good player, but they managed to get a really good price for him. Bastos is off as well, and they can bring in players like Gerhardt, they can bring in you know, Brekalo, the Croatian player as well, and Didavi. And now, of course, you've got like your obvious ones like Mario Gomez and things, but I think, this is pure speculation, that I think Wolfsburg aren't getting the same funding that they used to get from Volkswagen. The company's going through a difficult period. And I think, considering those constraints, I think that Klaus Allofs and Wolfsburg have came out the back end of the summer and they're still afloat. And not only that, but they go and win away to Augsburg. I think they deserve a huge amount of credit for that.
Ross, what do you want to get off your chest?
Yeah, I mean, for topical point on the day of the podcast, is the first Scottish player in the Bundesliga since Paul Lambert.
He's not. It's Thingy McNeil for Leverkusen.
Oh, Brian O'Neill, yeah, sorry. Quite a significant investment that Leipzig have made, €13 million in one player.
Please tell me that's not... Is he worth it?
Oliver Burke. Well, I mean, I haven't seen him play, so I can't really say that, but...
Didn't even know who he was.
Yeah, I know. but it's interesting that he is the kind of player who could actually thrive in the Bundesliga, because he's tall, he's got, you know, physically going to develop, and, you know, he dribbles with the ball very quickly, he plays at a high tempo, and this was the sort of thing that Ralf Rangnick was saying, and very interesting that Bayern Munich were interested, and he decided to go to Leipzig. He was persuaded by Ralf Rangnick. Spoke about the world-class facilities.
Mm.
Now, I guess we're being a little bit kind of selfish here talking about a Scottish player, but it's quite a significant moment. Even first British player for a long, long time.
Definitely.
To be at, you know, a top Bundesliga club and expected to play regularly. So I'm very curious to see how that one pans out. I think that could be maybe not an absolute humdinger of a success story, but I think it could certainly be, you know, a decent one.
I'd like to see more players
play abroad. But it's important for, I think it's really important for British players to take that jump.
Seriously.
You know, like Oliver Burke could have gone £13 million to Newcastle, have gone to Southampton or whatever. He's not going to develop him as a player. Now he's coming to a club that, you know,
specifically
really
by young players,
Who specifically by young players with the idea of developing them in mind. You know, they've brought in a lot of guys from Stuttgart. Stuttgart had a really good academy, like Rangnick and guys like that. And they... We'll try and nurture him into being a top player. So I think from that perspective, it's a kind of something that British players should do a little bit more often. So yeah, that was just one point I wanted to make.
Well, the thing I want to get off my chest, we've talked about it before the show, and it's interesting that you made a Leipzig point as well, because my big Leipzig point is that Bernardo is a guy that came in from Red Bull Salzburg into Leipzig as Salzburg came out of the Champions League. Now, the reason why I think this is an absolute joke is because this is I'm an American. I'm used to affiliates. I'm used to seeing affiliates for baseball teams. I'm used to seeing affiliates for soccer teams. And not football teams, soccer teams. We call it soccer over there. but this, I mean, it's making a huge... It's basically completely changing the transfer market. And I think it is a bad trend that's going to start, because you see how much investment now is going into big teams, not just in, obviously, in England, but also in Spain and in Italy. And if you have these, if you basically allow these clubs to affiliate with each other, then it's basically going to be a bunch of players moving around the same company and for joke transfer fees. And it's going to completely screw up the competitiveness of the market. And I think the biggest example was Marcel Sabitzer. He had a buyout clause when he was, I think it was Austria Wien who he played for before. He had a buyout clause that no Austrian club could basically attain. It was only a club outside of Austria could buy it. So what did Leipzig do? Leipzig bought him and loaned him to Red Bull Salzburg and completely made that buyout clause relevant. These are advantages that Salzburg and Leipzig have, and that I know that another great example is what Watford and Udinese and Granada are doing. These are advantages that these clubs have that other clubs are not going to get. Now we have to say that we're just evolving with the times, of course, but obviously Germany is a country that is trying really hard to hold on to its tradition, which is why they have the 50+1 rule still in place, which is why they have so many rules against players the type of academy systems that you have and the type of players you can have in your squad. If you have those kinds of rules and you have these, you have to kind of enforce them in some way. Now Leipzig has gotten pretty much around every single rule that there is in Germany, And I think that's a problem.
Just to be devil's advocate on this, on that point about exchanging players between, you know, kind of franchise clubs, could one argue that that's actually good management if you are a rich guy or a rich association that wants to buy a number of different clubs? Like you see with the City Football Group, where they have clubs, I think, in Japan and Australia, Melbourne City,
yeah.
New York City,
yeah.
Yokohama and Man City, right? So they've got that already there. Is it good management that you can buy players, maybe you
think
can send them on to another club, you can develop them? In some cases, maybe with Antwerp and Man United in years gone by, they've tried to bypass the work permit law, so they'd be signing a player from Africa,
yeah.
or from China, we'll send them to Belgium for a few years, and then they'll be able to get a EU passport. Is it good management?
Arsenal have the same, I think, with a few clubs in Europe as well. But in terms of, you know, sending players on loan to gain experience, I don't think anybody would disagree that from a business perspective, you know, Manchester City, New York City, you know, all of that, Melbourne City. I think from a football perspective, a football fan perspective, it's worrying that the fat, rich people are getting fatter and that money is staying in one pot rather than necessarily being spread between lots of different ones. I think that would be my only concern.
Well, let me make this point too. You have... The great thing about football is that you have clubs all over the place, and they all have a chance to compete to be in the top league. And that's always been part of the footballing tradition. There's always been these tiers. There's always been this opportunity to get to the next level. Now, if you have these clubs that are basically taking a share out of the possible players you could get to make your club more legitimate, that is going to be a big problem for the tradition of what football basically stands
for.
You
see that with the Champions League, with the recent
yeah,
changes, and
absolutely.
Certainly Germany is going to benefit quite a lot out of this, actually.
Specifically.
Yeah,
especially massively.
The one absolute abhorrent thing I feel about this is that a lot of these clubs never even came out publicly and talked about it. It was all UEFA doing the business behind closed doors, and nobody had the opportunity.
It's the ECA.
It's the ECA, the European Clubs Association.
Sure,
but the ECA... But the ECA represents 204 clubs.
The ECA represents
204 clubs.
Yeah.
204 clubs were not asked about this. Every club outside of the top
and that's
five
I mean.
Or six super clubs... Are not consulted
and that's
on
what
this.
I mean about super clubs. And you know, you keep in the top, you're making it more of an elite sport. And that's a danger.
I understand UEFA's thing about, you know, we want it to be the top Premier club competition in the world.
But
I
it
totally
already
understand
is,
that.
Isn't
it?
It
is.
Why
do
we need
totally,
to change
I totally
it?
Understand that.
No, it's not.
But
it's not the top club.
No, because the team who gets relegated from the Premier League this season makes more money than the person who wins the
right,
Champions
Right,
well
then we're measuring it by finance,
yeah,
not by
no, but
prestige.
But the reason that these clubs in Europe are fretting about this is because in three or four seasons, Manchester United won't even bother with the Champions League the way things are going.
Well, no, but that's because in
it's
three or four
them.
Seasons,
oh, no,
in the
rate
that it's
that
going.
At all. I don't agree with that at all.
No,
three or four
well,
seasons, will,
it'll be a Super League. It won't be a Champions League.
Yeah.
But who's going to be in the Super League? Why would who's? It's going to be...
It'll be the top teams in Europe. It won't be anybody else.
But why would the English teams leave?
No, they won't leave.
Because Manchester United, Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea will want more. They want more.
All right, well, let's,
I know what you're
saying. We're totally tumbled in the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Let's save this Super League
yeah.
conversation for another day, because I think that's the topic that's going to come up. Leipzig, that issue is probably going to come up.
Bloody Leipzig.
So, but let's put a bow on this first.
Can I make a minor point and just say, we haven't talked about it, but the Sunday games were fantastic. Hertha Berlin against...
Oh, the last 5 minutes
yeah.
of that game.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, with the drama, from what we saw.
Yeah, sure. Julian Schieber, wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's put a bow on this. We're reaching about an hour, so let's put a bow on this first episode. We're working on a lot of things to make it more interactive, just so you guys know. But for this first one, we're just going to have the first four of us here. So let's go around the table. Ross Dunbar, you can follow him on Twitter at RossDunbar93. Stefan Biankowski is S. Biankowski, and John Bloggs is John Bloggs. Jonathan Harding is at John Bloggs with 2 G's, I believe. Well,
and 66.
And 66 at the end. So John Bloggs, 66 with 2 G's and 2 6's. And I'm Davis Van Opdorp. Thanks for listening this week, and we hope you tune next week. Thanks.